Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome back one last time this week. It is the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. Like I said, Friday, end of the week. More snow over here in PA, Joe. How's it going? Assuming over there in the Wisconsin, Milwaukee area, you're dealing with the same kind of weather.
Yeah, we haven't had any recent snowfall, but we're still sitting on about 22 inches on the ground, and it's been below zero for about a week and a half straight. Forecast for the next 7 days looks like a balmy 25, so I'm looking forward to getting my shorts on and grilling some burgers.
Unbelievable. I didn't even know it was supposed to snow. Like when I went to bed on Thursday night, I had no expectation or idea it was supposed to snow the following day. And I woke up and I was like, oh, cool. It's just fantastic. We have an interesting slate on Friday night, though. There are 9 games in the NBA on Friday. As of like right now in this recording, 9:15 p.m., there's 9 games listed when you go on DraftKings on the main slate. But the Denver-Cleveland game isn't available. I have a feeling it will be added, so we will touch on that game. It is on FanDuel. The game was added to the schedule, I believe, yesterday because of a game that was postponed for COVID reasons. So they added this game to the schedule, so it looks like it will play. So we'll talk about Denver and Cleveland. But yeah, 9 games total on this slate. As always, injury news, stars potentially sitting, players and teams on back-to-back. So let's get right into it. Golden State at Orlando. Magic still super banged up, obviously. No Aaron Gordon. Fournier's questionable again. Or no, he's actually probable. So he looks like he'll be back from a 5-game absence, which will help them because Cole Anthony's obviously still out. Fultz is done for the year. We had been talking about Michael Carter-Williams. He had another meh game, but the minutes were there. I don't think anybody's going to go to him now at 5,100 with Fournier back after how underwhelming he's been. What do we do with Orlando here? Because it's pretty much been the Nikola Vucevic show. He's 9,900. He's going to get 45 fantasy points, but on a 9-game slate where there's plenty of options, and he's 9,900, do you have to go there? And then do you like, you know, with a back injury, I would imagine Fournier wouldn't be too limited, especially with how banged up Orlando is, but you really don't know with him. With Fournier back, are you playing anybody on Orlando outside of getting some Vucevic?
It's tough. I mean, I think I still have a little bit of interest in Michael Carter-Williams, but not nearly as much as I would if Fournier would still be out. I think he goes from a rock-solid cash gameplay to just a tournament dart. It is a pace-up matchup. A point guard like him thrives in this type of matchup. And without Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz, he should still get a lot of run at the point guard. Obviously, the return of Evan Fournier just siphons a ton of usage. You know, on the season, if you just take off Aaron Gordon, Markelle Fultz, and Cole Anthony off the court, Michael Carter-Williams still has a 26.9% usage rate. Obviously, a lot of those games, however, did come without Evan Fournier. In those situations, Fournier's usage rate is only 24.2%. I would expect to see those two essentially flip as we move forward. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Fournier's kind of creep up towards that 30% range, right around where Terrence Ross is in the same situation. And we saw it before, you know, Fournier went down with that back injury. When he had those couple games, he returned. He took on more of a distributor role with Fultz out, and especially now with Aaron Gordon out, we could see a bit more of a stable floor in terms of peripherals. You know, he's going to take close to 20 shots. So I don't mind Evan Fournier at his price. It's all contingent on what, if any, the minutes limit would look like. Because 5,800 is a very enticing price for him.
Yeah, especially because we talked about this Orlando team a lot, obviously, and you've brought up how Fournier, before he had the back injury, when he first came back from his first injury, he was facilitating a lot more because Fultz was out and Cole Anthony wasn't playing like huge minutes yet at the time. And obviously now Cole Anthony's done Fultz is done. Cole Anthony's hurt, so we might see him facilitate a little bit more, and that'll be good for a player like Fournier, who we usually know is more of a scoring only player. Michael Carter-Williams is interesting because he should still play the minutes and should still, you know, man the point guard position. And I talk about it with these Orlando point guards all the time. they just have the ball in their hands so much. Carter Williams, over the last three games, 6.45 seconds per touch on average. That is the third most in the league during that span, behind Damian Lillard and Luka. And it was the same with Cole Anthony. It was the same with Markelle Fultz. So the ball is going to be in his hands. 5,100. It still isn't an egregious price tag. And I don't. And Fournier is not a ball dominant player, right? He takes shots, but he's not ball dominant. So
he's definitely an off ball player,
right? For Golden State, Draymond Green is on the injury report, but he's dealing with an ankle. He's probable. He was questionable heading into or didn't play on Wednesday, actually, with the ankle. He said, or Steve Kerr said, that he expects him to play, so we'll keep an eye on that. I mean, this team's pretty easy too, right? You just played Steph Curry at 10-1, and he's going to be good because he's been ridiculous this year. Draymond, we talked about the assists. How great they've been, and how much better of a fantasy producer he is when he's at the center position. And then for me, it's, I just don't want to play Wiggins or Kelly Oubre. But if Draymond's out, what does Golden State do for you?
When Draymond sat out last game, I think the biggest beneficiary that we saw in terms of production was Kent Bazemore. He had an absolute ceiling game at his price, played close to 38 minutes, shot 10. He shot 19 times, which is pretty absurd when you consider he's playing alongside Steph Curry, Kelly Oubre, and Andrew Wiggins. I'm putting less stock into the offensive performance if looking at it, if Draymond's out tonight, as opposed to the 38 minutes. The 38 minutes at 3,600 is what I want to target. That obviously indicates he's going to have a massive role without Draymond. It seems like Steve Kerr is just, I mean, I don't want to say he's hesitant to play Eric Pascal because he did see over 31 minutes, but Eric Pascal, Kerr in the offense is hesitant to give him the volume that he would really need, even at 3,800, to be a worthwhile value. The 7 rebounds are something we're not really accustomed to. It's a bit more of an outlier. He is, over the last 18 months, more of a volume-dependent player, and I don't know, if Kent Bazemore is going to take this many shots, I don't know if I really want to go to Eric Pascal at the same range as Kent Bazemore, given he would be the fourth, maybe fifth option on offense right now. I guess you can get away with some Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins, but truth be told, I still don't necessarily, Draymond being out doesn't make me significantly more comfortable with them. Picking between the two, I think Oubre would be the easy choice, but they're still extremely volatile plays.
All right, let's move on. Keep an eye on Draymond's status, obviously. And Fournier's probable, but it doesn't mean he's definitely playing. Just keep an eye on that as well. All right, let's go to that Cleveland and Denver game. You have the game in front of you. I don't. We know that Denver has been without Paul Millsap. Will Barton had been out for a little bit. Jamichael Green and Michael Porter Jr. have been playing larger roles. And Monty Morris has been out, so Campazzo has been getting more run. What's the status on Denver heading into this game against Cleveland? And for Cleveland, we know Andre Drummond will not be playing.
So as of right now, Paul Millsap, PJ Dozier, and Gary Harris have been ruled out. Will Barton right now, he is listed as, I'd say, questionable. They haven't given him a designation. They just say he can return because he was gone for personal issues. It wasn't injury related. So he could return in this game. But with PJ Dozier, Gary Harris out, obviously that still opens up more room for Michael Porter Jr. on the wing. Obviously would lead to more minutes for Will Barton should he return as well. Curious to see what they do with Campazzo with those two out. Monty Morris is back, so he should see extra run at the two. But based on how Campazzo's been playing, I can't imagine that they would, fully phase him out of the rotation. Monty Morris came back last game and Campazzo still saw 25 minutes, scored 14 points in those 25 minutes. On FanDuel, at least, that's obviously the only price we have in front of us. At 4-2, I don't think I'd go there just because Monty Morris is sitting there at 4,100. I much prefer Monty Morris, assuming he sees a minutes bump back up to that 29 to 30 range as opposed to the 19 he saw in his first game back. That is just obviously something to monitor. But I think, you can touch on Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, but Jamal Murray's been playing out of his mind right now.
I mean, there's nothing to say. We'll see if they get added to the DraftKings main slate, and we'll see if Jamal Murray's priced in that low 7K range, if he is. Cleveland's defense got off to a great start this year. They have fallen off as of late. Yeah. They have not been good defensively. I think they were playing above their head. I think they're improved a little bit because Isaac Okoro is a good defender and Sexton's been a little bit better, but they're still not a good defense. I don't really know or care what Nikola Jokic's price is. Just play him. He's unbelievable. And then Jamal Murray, like you said, he's like, when he's hot, he's a player you want to play pretty much every slate. And you have the fact that Cleveland defense is struggling lately. They're actually allowing the fifth highest field goal percentage in the NBA off handoffs at 55.2%, which we love for Denver. We love for Jamal Murray, who's averaging the third most points per game off handoffs, and he's shooting 51% off handoffs. So I love Jamal Murray again. I love Jokic. The question we have to ask is, do we go to Michael Porter Jr. or Jermichael Green, who obviously they couldn't be worse than they were a couple nights ago, but they were better in their last game.
Yeah, Jermichael Green is probably – I think Jermichael Green gets a little risky at 4-2 on FanDuel. That does sound cheap, but typically at power forward, and because of the extra 10K salary FanDuel gives you, you don't ever need to really dip that low. And if you look at power forward – there are more reliable options. Like I would personally prefer to play Jay Crowder at 4,800, Daniel Tice for 4,900. There's just better options in my opinion on this slate. Michael Porter Jr. is the interesting one because we've seen, I mean, it's the tale of two Michael Porter Jr.'s really. We'll see that the Michael Porter Jr. we saw on Tuesday, I believe it was, where he didn't score a single raw point. Or, you know, he followed up the next game with a better outing, and we obviously know the ceiling that he does possess. 5,500 is pretty cheap. He saw 30 minutes last game, posted 14-7. Like I wouldn't. He still has that 40 fantasy point ceiling. I just think it's much more unlikely than people are willing to admit, especially with Jamal Murray playing this well. Monty Morris obviously going to take time on the wing. I will pass, but I do think you can get away with it just because he is cheap, strictly given his ceiling.
For Cleveland, like I said, Andre Drummond not going to play until they can trade him, which I agree with Draymond when we talked about that.
Yeah, like, I completely agree.
I think it's so stupid that like you can't even play. Like, okay, anybody that semi knows the NBA completely understands and agrees that Jared Allen should be your future. You know, he's 22, he's promising, he's good. Drummond not old by any means, but you know, the contract situation, like he just, you know, they're going to move on. Play him off the bench.
It's like, it's ridiculous.
Cleveland has an outside shot to sneak into the playoffs in the East. Like I don't know, maybe they're not trying to, but like it's messed up, man. Like the guy just has to sit there and not even play and hope that a team trades for him.
Yeah, it's. I mean, at the very least, at least he's collecting a fat check with his player option.
He definitely is.
But yeah, he's out. Larry Nance ruled out. Torian Prince has been ruled out as well. Kevin Love still out, although they say his return is sooner rather than later at this point. And in the backcourt, it looks like Delly, he's probably still out, but he has progressed through the concussion protocol, so he hasn't been officially ruled out yet. So pretty healthy backcourt, front court banged up. Against this Denver team, it has been an exploitable defense to attack. It kind of makes me like Colin Sexton at 6'9 on FanDuel. And Darius Garland is only 5'4".
I touted him in this spot the last time, and he had 4 points. Like I was literally like, "Yeah, Sexton's like a lock to get 20 real points," and he's done that. He's had 20 or more real points in 17 of 24 games. And of course, I mentioned that, and he goes for 4 real points against Denver. But it makes sense, right? Sexton's got a drive to the basket. Mm-hmm. Denver allows the highest field goal percentage in basketball at the rim. They can't protect the paint.
He did have 8 assists that game. That was impressive. Something you don't usually see out of Colin Sexton.
Yeah, that was the most non-Colin Sexton game ever. Again, I don't know what his price is on DraftKings. You said 6,900 on FanDuel. That tells me that.
Under 7K, I'm happy.
That means his price tag will probably be at least that or less on DraftKings usually. So yeah, I'd be okay with it. Jared Allen, what's his price? Because we know
I believe he's 7. So they moved him to center on rightfully so moved him to center on FanDuel. He's 7,400 against Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, it's a little scary. I mean, the matchup's good. All of his production pretty much comes at the rim. With Drummond off the floor this season, Jarrett Allen has a 34% rebounding rate, nearly a 20% usage rate, 1.2 fantasy points per minute. Does he get into foul trouble against Jokic? It's possible. Those are obviously the main two guys for me. Garland's a guy that I'm okay with when he's cheap enough because he can give you like those 14.8 assist games at like 5,600 on DraftKings. We obviously had Chetty go off in their last game too. I don't. It's so hard going blind and going into this game a little bit blind. But you have FanDuel,
I mean,
up, so
yeah, I do. I mean, Jetty is only 4,200. He's probably one of my favorite value plays of the slate on FanDuel with Torian Prince already ruled out. He obviously last Cavs game, February 15th against the Warriors, was another game Torian Prince sat out. Jetty got the start, saw 35 minutes, posted a 17.10 rebound, double-double. I would expect 35 minutes again with both Larry Nance, Torian Prince, and I guess Andre Drummond out. Well, they will run a bit smaller. At 4,200, it's hard to pass on a player in this matchup that should contribute in just about every statistical category. He'll pick up some occasional steals. You know he's going to score points. You know he's going to rebound the basketball if he gets the minutes. So I like him a lot for this price. Darius Garland on FanDuel, we don't know what he's going to be on DraftKings. $5,400 is a really enticing price for Darius Garland. He's been pretty volatile lately, but, I mean, he has as much upside as Colin Sexton, and he's not playing nearly at the level he was to start the season, but this is still too cheap, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Anything else from this game?
No, I think that's pretty straightforward.
All right, Atlanta and Boston. These teams played the other night. Trae Young went off for 40 points, 8 assists on a 14 of 20 shooting. Still just $9,500 on DraftKings. I don't get it. But I like him again here. I talked about how Boston struggles against shooters off screens and particularly off handoffs. They give up the second most points per game, the most points per possession at nearly 1.1, and the second highest field goal percentage at 59%. Trae Young's not like Jamal Murray or Steph Curry off handoffs, but he's a big part of his game. So I'm going right back to Trae Young here. I don't worry about this. This Boston defense has been definitely worse this year. And I believe in that last game that he played against Boston, Kemba didn't play because he sat in the back-to-back. So yep. Matchup might even be better because Kemba's not someone we fear on the defensive end.
Yeah, he's one of the worst statistical defenders in terms of real plus-minus in the NBA right now. And again, Trae Young, under 10K, has as much upside as just about anyone on the slate. So I really like Trae Young in this spot. And then outside of Trae Young, Clint Capella at $7,200 feels way too cheap. I know you and I have gone back and forth. You typically prefer Capella. I typically prefer John Collins. This is a slate where I would probably smash Capella over Collins.
Yeah, we talked about it. The Hawks were really cheap in their last game, and they're still cheap here. I mean, Capella, another 20-point double-double in that last game. His price went down to $7,200. Like, that's a misprice. John Collins at $6,800. Didn't have the ceiling game, got in a bit of foul trouble, only played 28 minutes. But again, that price, given his ceiling, is too low. It's kind of the same thing for me with Atlanta here. Trae Young, Capella, and Collins are all a little bit too cheap, in my opinion. And I have significant interest in all three of them. Gallinari at $4,300. If we're missing a ton of value, maybe. It was probably, 25 to 30 minutes is what we can project for him?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay. Anybody else in Atlanta?
I don't hate it. I don't hate the Gallinari call. I think on a site like FanDuel, I would probably prefer the value in someone like Jetty for a few hundred dollars cheaper than Gallinari. But I think there is definitely merit to playing him. I assume you would do too. I have more interest in the Boston side of this game than I do Atlanta.
Well, let's talk about Boston. Jaylen Brown on the injury report, questionable with a knee injury. That would obviously change things here. Tatum, $8,800. Kemba Walker should be back in line up here at $6,500. Kemba's a guy that I struggle with. Like, he's been shooting the ball a little bit better lately, but overall, since he's been back, has shot the ball terribly. But his usage rate's been massive. It's around like 28% since he returned to the lineup. And now we could have potentially no Jaylen Brown. I mean, with Brown off the floor, it's a two-man show, right? 35.2% usage for Kemba, 35.9% for Jason Tatum.
Yeah, and it's as volatile and as inconsistent as Kemba has been since his return, that usage rate is ridiculously high for anyone, let alone someone priced in the mid to low $6,000 range. I ran it as well with both Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart off the court. He's averaging over 1.15 DK points per minute. So there certainly is upside there. I'm not going to sit here and say he's my favorite mid-tier play on a full slate, but I definitely can see the reason to get there if Jaylen Brown's out. I think he's an easy fade for me, though, if Jaylen Brown is in. I would probably just gravitate to then one of Jaylen Brown at 7,900, or Jason Tatum, like you said, at 8,800. I don't mind Daniel Tice at 4,500, assuming he isn't on any type of minutes limit. I believe it was a hand or finger injury he was dealing with. I can't see that being something that hampers him too much. So assuming he sees 25 minutes at 4,500, he's a fine value play, in my opinion, with the dual position eligibility.
Any interest in Semi Ojeleye at 3,500? He's been playing solid minutes.
He's been playing well.
If Brown's out, he'll have to shoot more because Jaylen Brown takes like 21 shots a game.
I mean, if Jaylen Brown's out, I will have interest knowing he probably sees 30 to 32 plus minutes. He'll pick up, like, this is a type of matchup you want to target a player like Semien. So I would definitely have interest. I wouldn't bank on like a massive offensive output, but you do know it's in the range of outcomes. So I think he'd be a safer value play in terms of floor.
All right, keep an eye on Jaylen Brown. Kemba, I'm still not totally convinced, but he's going to have a usage rate north of 30% if Jaylen Brown's out. So if he plays 30 to 32 minutes, it doesn't matter. He will take 18 shots if that's the case. So could still go for like 40, 45 fantasy points, especially against Trae Young. All right, Chicago, Philadelphia up next. Ben Simmons missed their last game with an illness. He is probable to play. Shake Milton, who's been dealing with an ankle injury, he's doubtful, so looks like he'll be out once again for the Sixers. And for the Bulls, no Otto Porter Jr., no Lauri Markkanen. Sixers are going to be at full strength for the most part. I'm kind of mad that Simmons got ruled out because I was so high on Tobias entering that game. And yeah, if Simmons didn't play, or if Simmons played, Tobias probably wasn't going to go for 24, 15, and 5. But like, I still think he would have had a good game. It was a good matchup for him. But now he's up to 7,900. Embiid was looking scary a little bit in that last game, and then he just decided to, you know, run the entire offense, finished one assist shy of a triple-double. What do you think of the Sixers here? Great matchup against Chicago, pace-up spot, terrible defense. I mean, I don't know how they stop Embiid, but, like, with this team playing so fast, going back to the well here, I mean, Simmons and Tobias Harris, both top 10 in transition points per game. Simmons is like a 30% frequency rate off transition. I think it's kind of interesting.
Embiid is by default in this matchup one of the best plays in the entire slate. But assuming Simmons plays, he's in a sneaky good spot. And people, though, especially at $9,100, people will not play him as long as Joel Embiid is healthy. This is a spot that he, as long as his game stays relatively close for three and a half quarters, could absolutely smash in. Like you said, one of the best transition players in the league. Obviously, he will probably be assigned to Zach LaVine most of the night, which obviously then expands his potential for defensive peripherals as well. So I think he's in a very good spot. I think he should see 33-plus minutes regardless of the outcome of the game because of how much Zach LaVine plays. So I prefer him, even with price baked in, over Tobias Harris. Typically, I'm the other way around when Embiid's healthy. But again, like sub 8K for Tobias Harris, I think if you are fading both Embiid and Simmons, you can get away with a Tobias Harris play. With Shake Milton out, I would probably lean to Seth Curry. Saw almost 37 minutes last game.
Back-to-back 37 games. And then 35 the game before that.
His scoring is also starting to come around a bit. He had a bit of a lull for a few weeks leading up to probably the last week.
I don't think he was 100% from COVID because he actually had it.
He had it, yeah. So I would assume he's obviously, based on his play and especially based on how much he's playing, I would assume he's at full strength right now and he's looked really good. So I do have some interest there at $4,800 with Shake Milton out as well.
Yeah, that's a good call. I think he's too cheap there. That's a price you can target him at when this team's like totally at full strength, but especially if they're missing a guy who Shake Milton's a relatively high usage player when he's on the floor. So I like Curry as well. For the Bulls, I don't really like anybody. Like, if you play Simmons or someone, you can run it back with Zach LaVine, but like, I don't want to play Kobe White here. Wendell Carter Jr. is 5,200 and played 27 minutes last game, but he could foul out. You know, he's not. All right, let me rephrase that. He's not like, you know, Naz Reid in terms of fouls, right? But it's just if he's already limited in minutes and he's facing Embiid, it's a little bit riskier. And then like Thaddeus Young, like 5,800 facing his former team, meh. I don't really have much interest in Chicago.
I mean, I get Thaddeus Young. Like I'm on this train where I Thaddeus Young just, he's overperforming. Like, I don't know how much longer this can go on, but I refuse to pay him, play him at this price. I just won't do it because I feel, especially with Wendell Carter Jr. back, he's going to get a lot less playing time at the five. $5,800 is a price I'm more willing to pay than when he was 6,500 to 7K. But it's still almost, I'd say it's still $800 too expensive on a full slate, in my opinion. So I don't have interest in him. I think, like you said, Levine is fine as a run back. But, you know, even at 5,200 in this matchup, I'm an easy fade for Wendell Carter.
All right. Moving right along, Detroit at Memphis up next. Dylan Brooks on the injury report with a thigh issue. He's questionable. Same with DeAnthony Melton. He's questionable with the shoulder. He's missed the last handful of games. And then for Detroit, we know Blake Griffin's not going to play. What do you like from this game?
So off the bat, I will continue to go back. I'm going to start with Detroit. I will continue to go back to the well with DeLon Wright. Like, again, $6,100. His price has moved exactly $100 since his last game. He didn't have the most noteworthy game, I should say, last game. Still played almost 40 minutes. Only had 28 fantasy points, but shots were there. And again, as long as he's this cheap with this much playing time, especially in a matchup with a point guard like John Morant, which could induce more peripherals, I will have interest in DeLon Wright. And then Jeremy Grant. With Blake Griffin out, Derrick Rose gone, Jeremy Grant is going to continue to soak in usage. Shot 25 times last game. And after he had about a 3 or 4 game lull where he didn't top 30 fantasy points, shot volume was down, didn't shoot above 31%. He's looked back to form last game, shooting a ton of threes, and 7,500 for his upside is too cheap, in my opinion. I mean, he had 43 raw points. Like, he did this without peripherals.
Yeah, and it's not like Jeremy Grant's a player that normally doesn't get peripherals either.
Correct. So. It's usually the opposite. I mean, it's more balanced this year, but typically he's been one to get there strictly on peripherals.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with those options. Plumlee at 6,800. I just think there's better center plays. Like, John Collins is the same price. We talked about Capella is only a couple $100 more. And then some of the cheaper centers on the slate we talked about. And, like, Jovell on the other side of this game is 7,100.
That's really, I mean, in this matchup, like, it sounds weird for me to say, like, that's really cheap because I didn't think we'd see Mason Plumlee in the 7K range this, excuse me, not Mason Plumlee, Jovell in the low 7K range based on how he's been playing. Like, this is a spot where you think he would be closer to 8K. But again, Detroit 28th in the league against rebounders, bottom half of the league against both scorers and skilled centers. So as long as he gets the minutes, which I think he should against Mason Plumlee, this is a matchup I want to target him in. I would also, on the opposite side, target Mason Plumlee.
So you like Mason Plumlee at that price?
I do. I think at this price, one of the big reasons I like him is because I don't think anyone else will. I can't see people going to him at 6,800 against a more traditional center. But again, Mason Plumlee isn't a center who really leaves the paint. So I don't see any way he sees below 32 to 34 minutes. Recent form is pretty remarkable aside from an 11.8 rebound game, because that's not a bad game, but relative to a triple-double or what he's been doing, it's obviously not as noteworthy, but he's playing well enough at 6,800 where I will take a shot in a tournament if I'm fading the other Pistons.
For Memphis, if Brooks and Melton are out, any Grayson Allen interest at 4,900? He's coming off a really nice game, 22 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists in 32 minutes. You know, Tyus Jones might get some more run. He played 22 minutes, but I don't think I'd go to him. And then John Morant, 7,400, like, I think that's a little too cheap for him. He's coming off back-to-back ceiling games, which is nice to see. Triple-doubled against Oklahoma City and shot 4-14 from the field.
Yeah. I am quickly developing a love-hate relationship, not only with John Morant, but this whole Grizzlies team outside of Jovell. But John Morant is the centerpiece of it. Like, he's getting the minutes. Production the last two games has been phenomenal. But, like, if he keeps shooting this efficiently, are we going to count on him to get peripherals at this rate going forward? Like, his assists have been incredible. The rebounds, to me, are a bit of an outlier. 7,400, I guess, bottom line, is just too cheap in this matchup, assuming he gets those minutes. So the upside is there. But I do think there is more volatility than we would like. And I say that because I do think he'll be pretty popular on this slate. Do you see his ownership?
I don't think he'll be crazy popular.
I'd say 25% is probably what I put him at.
I'll take the under.
Would you? Okay.
Yeah, pretty easily, actually.
He's been somewhat more popular in cash games over the last probably week and a half.
Yeah, because he's safe.
Yep, strictly because of his price. At these prices, though, I still think Jonas Valanciunas is going to be cheaper.
Yeah, I like Jovell.
That's popular. I like Jovell personally more than Ja.
So do I.
In this spot. Are you going to anyone on the wing here? Obviously, you know, if Dylan Brooks ends up missing.
Anderson's been really good, but.
Anderson's been great. But then, obviously, there's the potential for De'Anthony Melton and Dylan Brooks to miss. Desmond Bain back. With him back, would you be off of Grayson Allen if both sit? Would you be on Desmond Bane, off Grayson Allen, off Desmond Bane, on Grayson Allen? Like, how would you decipher the, like, specifically the shooting guard position with Melton and Brooks potentially out?
I actually would just go to Desmond Bane. He's been good. He's
I think
been
I would too for the price.
Guy that can give you 3-point potential. I think they'll play him at least 25, 26 minutes if both those guys are out.
I think that's fair. I mean, he's even with Dylan Brooks in the lineup.
Brooks doesn't play like 36 minutes.
I was going to say, like, he's only playing a couple less minutes per game than Dylan Brooks anyways. I like that call a lot. I actually don't know if I would get to Grayson Allen regardless. I think I'd rather just find this out, you know, to someone like Kyle Anderson,
who
I still can't stomach at 6,400, but he's playing out of his mind.
Yeah, and he gives you peripherals and might have to score a little bit more if they're missing some of these guys, so... All right, let's go to your terrible Milwaukee Bucks. They'll be on the second of back-to-back in this game on Friday, hosting the Oklahoma City Thunder. Thunder, a little bit healthier. SGA is back. They're still without George Hill, but we know Theo Maledon came back. So almost at full strength now. Milwaukee, I believe Drew Holiday will probably be out again. Middleton has been super underwhelming. I don't know what he has tonight offhand the last time I looked, but
he's, I'm at a point now where super underwhelming is almost a compliment right now. Chris Middleton, 11 points, 5 rebounds on 4 of 10 shooting in the fourth quarter.
Yikes. And his price keeps plummeting to 7,600.
The problem is because his price keeps plummeting, he's still picking up decent ownership.
Yeah.
Like,
and Drew Holiday's still out.
Yep. So it's still a good spot. Like, he's going to get 35 plus minutes. My concern, though, like, obviously he has 10 shots as of now, shot 8 times in the first game against Toronto, but we aren't seeing crazy volume specifically over roughly the past 10 games from Middleton, like dating back. So if we're looking strictly from when the calendar turned to February, Middleton has played in 9 games, not including the – I guess we should include the game tonight. So including the game tonight, he's at 22 DK points in the fourth quarter right now. Hypothetically, if he does not get to 30, he's dropped below 30 DK points in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it'd be 5 out of his last 9 games below 30 DK points. That's kind of scary to me. I don't know what to do with him.
I think the process is to just keep playing him because he's not this bad of a player. We know that, and the opportunity is still there. And Milwaukee as a whole, you talked about, has just not been good lately.
Yeah.
Giannis has been carrying everything.
As unproductive as Middleton has been, because the team isn't playing well, that is leading him to see close to 40 minutes a game right now.
That's leading to Giannis just doing everything.
Correct, which I will, again, 10-8 for Giannis. I don't care if it's the second leg of a back-to-back. You will have a hard time talking me off of him. As of right now in this game, Giannis has 20, 10, and 7 with
in a bad offensive game for Milwaukee.
Yep.
I'm okay going back to Bryn Forbes as well, assuming Drew Holiday's still out. He's been starting. He's been starting. He's at 11-4 in 25 minutes with about 9 minutes left in the game. So he's going to play 25 minutes for like the 6th time in the last 7 games or so. 3,600. I have no problem going back to him. What about we talked about Giannis, so we play him. What about the Thunder here? You know, pace up spot against Milwaukee, we think is usually good defense, but, you know, they're missing their arguably their second best defensive player in Drew Holiday. They play fast. SGA 8200 is really intriguing. The floor is obviously there with him. He has the ball in his hands per average in terms of minutes as much as any player in basketball. What do you think of the Thunder side?
I'm actually, for one of the first times, I'm okay targeting a team against Milwaukee because our defense has just looked atrocious. We're letting up points in the paint like it's our job right now in the game against Toronto as we speak. So I do think there is merit to Al Horford, who has had success against Milwaukee. And I don't mind Ahamadou Diallo for 6'1". The issue with this team, or an SGA for that matter, at 8'2", but they are getting healthy. Like, now they're obviously, George Hill has been out for weeks now since before they went through the COVID struggles. Trevor Reese has been out for an incredibly long time. Outside of those two, they're back to a full rotation. So while I am okay targeting this team against Milwaukee, they aren't presenting us with those screaming value plays that we've seen in an Isaiah Roby or when Kenrick Williams was 4,400. I mean, even Lou Dort is priced up to 5,300. I don't know if that's a price I would pay for him. So I would probably gravitate to an SGA, a Hamidou Diallo, or like an Al Horford, because those are the assets that are going to be more reliable when this rotation is at full strength.
Do not disagree. Couple games left. We have Phoenix at New Orleans. Injury-wise, Steven Adams landed awkwardly on Wednesday night with an ankle sprain. He's questionable. We saw him miss like two games, I think it was, not too long ago. Jackson Hayes started both those games. Wasn't too productive. We can gush over Zion again if we want. Zion's back-to-back 50-point fantasy games after doing it once since Christmas. He's awesome. He's locked in. Like I said, he's going to shoot 60% from the field almost every game. The peripherals are better. I know Phoenix's defense has been great this year, but Zion, if he's playing at, you know, this level, is matchup proof. Plus, the steals have been there the last two games. Phoenix plays slow, but I wonder if New Orleans is just playing faster lately. He's not my favorite play in the slate, where he has been like one of my favorite plays in the slate the past couple slates in a row, but still have no problem getting to Zion Williamson, and he's finally priced over Brandon Ingram, who's coming off a down game. He's 8K. What do you think of the Pelicans, especially Steven Adams is out, because could get some value with Jackson Hayes, though. He's been someone that could easily be, you know, a trap at minimum salary, because he still might just play 17 minutes. Maybe Josh Hart is the benefit, because he just grabs double-digit rebounds like it's his job.
So again, Phoenix is typically a team I do not target. I have one player I'm interested in, and that is Willie Hernan Gomez. He is leapfrogged. Jackson Hayes is the direct backup to Steven Adams. He's seen 20-plus minutes in two of his last three games. He has posted over 25 fantasy points in three of his last four games. I would assume, even if Jackson Hayes starts, that Hernan Gomez does see the majority of the run and playing time at the center position. And he's a career player that averages roughly mm-hmm. I believe Eddie talked about it.
We talked about him in Charlotte a lot.
He's not like the greatest player, but in terms of fantasy, like, he's going to average over a fantasy point per minute. He just had a 17 rebound game against the Blazers, but on Wednesday had a 17 rebound game. Like, he has this the upside, and he's still only 3,900. The one deterrent, or I guess two, he doesn't have power forward eligibility. He's strictly center, and I do think he will be extremely popular. So if you're playing cash games, I'm fully on board with Willie Hernan Gomez as the chalk value play.
If Steven Adams plays, is it just like Zion if you want and that's it from this team? Because that's probably where I'm at.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Brandon Ingram is a really nice play at 8K flat, but I think Brandon Ingram will see a lot of Mikal Bridges.
Booker's not even that bad. Like, for a scoring guard, Booker's not a bad defender.
Those two guys obviously don't have the size to slide down to Zion. So Zion will see like Jay Crowder out of the gate probably, but
he's going to blow by him.
I much prefer Zion to Brandon Ingram. I do think you can get away with a little Brandon Ingram, though. The problem is we're now seeing these Zion somewhat ceiling games. Like, back-to-back 50-plus point
games. He's not even getting double-digit rebounds consistently yet. He's not even getting double-digit rebounds on a consistent level or getting stocks. It's stupid,
man. Like, holy cow.
Yeah, he's awesome. For Phoenix, anybody stand out to you? I mean, everybody's kind of priced fairly. Booker, 8,100, he's been playing well. I don't mind taking a shot on DeAndre Ayton at 6,700, especially if Adams is out. This is a team that – with Steven Adams healthy for most of the year, bottom five in field goal percentage allowed from within 4 feet of the basket. So if he's out, I don't think it hurts going against Hernan Gomez and Jackson Hayes. Like Bridges at 6K, like he's kind of like he reminds me of like a better offensively in term at least Lou Dort. Like, you know, he's gonna play 35 minutes, but the ceilings and the usage aren't that exciting. You know, then you have Chris Paul, 7,700 floor play. We'll have some occasional ceiling games. Not really a bad play at that price tag.
Yeah, I agree. Ayton's price, similar to Middleton for me right now. Like, I want to pull the trigger because it's just so low, but it just feels like it. I don't want to say it feels like a trap, but there's just so much more volatility than you would like to believe. And that's obviously why he's been priced down this much. But if Steven Adams is out, I do like that call a lot.
It also seems very difficult the way they're running their offense that both Booker and Ayton go off. I feel like it's going to be one or the other.
It is 100%. Luckily, Chris Paul is kind of immune to that process. And I do like Chris Paul at 7-7 in this game, especially because, like we talked about on the last podcast, since the start of the season, New Orleans defense in general has really regressed from a top 10 unit in the league to now a bottom 10. Obviously, then losing Steven Adams helps at the rim and only furthers that argument for Chris Paul. I also don't hate Jay Crowder at 4,800 as a value play. He's still a pretty good bet for at 28 to 30 minutes. Volume has been there the last two games, seen over 30 fantasy points in three of the last four. So I think there is merit to Jay Crowder as long as he doesn't get in some foul trouble or something with Zion.
All right, two games left. Toronto at Minnesota. The Raptors closing out a game against Milwaukee right now. Kyle Lowry did not play in this game. Suffered a thumb and an ankle injury. So we'll see if he can get back in lineup here. The Raptors, interesting starting lineup. They started Van Vliet, Norman Powell, OG Anunoby, DeAndre Bembry, and Siakam at the five against Milwaukee tonight. Bembry's been at 32 minutes so far. He's not done much, but he's played 32 minutes. I guess OG is still a little bit limited. He's only at 22 minutes.
I mean, we could potentially see OG sit in this game too.
Right. He just came back. So, Van Vliet having a solid game, 17-7-4. Norman Powell, 24-4-3. Norman Powell's like the best player that nobody knows.
The Bucks are getting handled by a dude named Norman right now. God. I mean, I guess you could argue this is a revenge narrative because we did draft him, but still really frustrating.
So it's your fault then. If Lowry gets ruled out again, especially against Minnesota, how much do we like $7,800 Fred Van Vliet? Norman Powell is expensive a little bit. I don't want to say expensive.
He's less than what he's been.
Yeah, I was going to say he was expensive, but now he's 6,200. That would be a nice price tag if Lowry's out, but especially if OG also sits. Yeah. And then Pascal Siakam, 7,700. Minnesota's defense isn't good. They play relatively fast. Like, these guys should be. And again, they're not going. Like, Siakam's having a good game, too, 25-6-5. Like, we know Van Vliet's got a massive ceiling. I think they're all, especially because their starters play so many minutes, I think they're all high floor, high ceiling combos.
Yeah. I mean, Minnesota's defense, in my opinion, is worse with Karl Anthony Towns on the court.
Yeah. I wrote about that. It was the same thing last year, too. When they had Gorgui Dieng and Towns, when Towns was off the floor, their defense got better. And when he's on the floor, their defense got worse.
Yep. He is much better offensively than defensively, to keep it simple. I do think if Lowry's out, especially if OG's out, this team in general just feels too cheap. I would have a ton of interest in Van Vliet at 7,800. I think Norman Powell would probably be one of my favorite dollar-for-dollar plays on the slate if OG and Lowry are ruled out. And then Siakam at 77 would be a phenomenal play. Again, I don't know. Like, I know Bembry's only 3,100 and is over 30 minutes right now. I just don't know if you need to go there on this slate unless you're trying to differentiate your lineup and pay up for like a Giannis and a Joel Embiid or something crazy where you're trying to fit two studs in. I know Malachi Flynn, let me double check how long he's played because there was hope that he could play a significant role. Yeah, he hasn't played in this game. It looks like Matt Thomas has gotten 17 minutes. He's seen an uptick in minutes with Lowry out, so he'd probably be another value play who might be worthwhile knowing he can get hot, but I just don't think you need to get that cute knowing how cheap this starting lineup is. Chris Boucher too, $6,300 is always a fine price, having a down game right now, but first game against Milwaukee, he saw 30 minutes. in this specific game. So Thursday against Milwaukee, he's at 22 minutes with 5 minutes left in the game. It's a 17-point game, so I'd assume he probably plays the last at least 3 or 4 minutes of the game. So his minutes are still more secure than they've been most of the season. So I do like him at 6'3 as well, assuming OG is out.
Over to Minnesota, Karl Anthony Towns coming off a nice game against Indiana. Game went to overtime, but still 30 points, 10 rebounds. 9,200 is really cheap for him given the role he has right now. And Anthony Edwards continues to play really well. I know the stat line wasn't great, but he shot 3-15, but that'll happen with him. And he, prior to this game, was shooting much better. Probably still hasn't moved to 6K. I'd be perfectly fine going right back to Anthony Edwards. And it's just the past couple of podcasts, it's been, okay, Anthony Edwards is a strong play, and you can play Cat. Beasley's fine at 6,900, too. He's going to play as many minutes as pretty much anybody on this team. But anybody else interest you from this team? It's really just those three again.
Yeah, it's really just those three for me as well. Karl Anthony Towns is just way too cheap. Toronto, obviously not an interior defense that we really fear as much anymore without Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka there. So I feel like he's a pretty safe bet for 50-plus fantasy points if they want this game to stay close. And then it's just Anthony Edwards and Malik Beasley for me. I pray for whoever plays Ricky Rubio at 6,200.
Yeah, I'm good on that. Absolutely good on that. All right, closing it out, Utah at the Los Angeles Clippers. There's really no point of us breaking this game down right now because it could be just pointless, but we'll give it a go. Clippers, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, both questionable. We'll see if they can play. Nicholas Batum's also questionable. Luke Kennard is also questionable. So the Clippers might have like two wings in this game. And then Mike Conley, questionable again for the Jazz. He's missed 6 games in a row now. During that 6-game stretch, Donovan Mitchell averaging 89 touches per game, nearly 8 minutes of possession per game, usage rate well over 30%. He's been great, and the Jazz in general have been great. These teams just played. Mitchell went for 24, 8, and 7. If Conley's out, he's too cheap. If Conley's in, he's still viable. The Jazz are kind of easy for me. I like Donovan Mitchell. Same argument every single slate with Rudy Gobert. Had a 20-20 game. Price didn't move. His price never moves. If you want safety at center with some potential ceiling that we just saw, you play Rudy Gobert. It's kind of that simple.
Yeah, I don't know what he has to do. I really don't understand what DraftKings wants to see to price him up. Like, he literally has 50-plus fantasy points in 2 of the last 4 games. He's a surefire double-double. He literally just had a 23-point, 20-rebound game. Like, what does he have to do to get priced up? I love him, and again, we've talked about it almost every podcast. He's never that popular, so that's a price I still want to exploit. Donovan Mitchell, still a solid play at 8,300. Obviously a much better play if Mike Conley's out, because his usage rate and touches per game have been absolutely astronomical since he has been starting at point guard. I think the rest of this team is dependent on Mike Conley's status and the status of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. If Conley's out and then you get one or both of the studs on the other team out, Jordan Clarkson, I think at 6'2 is a phenomenal play given how Utah has been playing and frankly blowing teams out of the water. He would probably be a good candidate to see 30-plus minutes. You would also then get another nice play in Joe Ingles at 5,700. I think you can get away with a little bit of Royce O'Neal for value at under 5K as well. I just don't think it's necessary. Is there anyone else on Utah that you like to target, if whether Conley's in or out, I guess?
Nope, it's pretty simple. It's mostly Conley, or it's mostly Mitchell and Gobert. Gobert I'm fine with regardless. Mitchell more so if Conley's out, obviously. And by the way, Jordan Clarkson pretty much already locked up sixth man of the year. There's really nobody that has a shot to beat him. Yeah, there's nobody now that I think about it.
No, he's a bucket. There's absolutely no one.
And yeah, for the Clippers, if one of George or Kawhi play and the other one doesn't, probably makes some sense to get some exposure to whoever is playing. And the rest of this team, like Lou Williams is priced up a little bit after he's been much more involved. 6,600, he's been good. It's going to be hard for me to get to him on this slate, especially if one of George or Paul or Kawhi Leonard play.
I would even have – I frankly on this slate would probably have a bit of a hard time getting to him even if both of them are out.
It's fair.
Still a rock-solid play. I mean, if those two are out, if Batum's out, if Kennard is out, it's going to be hard not to go to like him and Marcus Morris.
Yeah.
But in this matchup, I think it'd take more than usual for me to get there.
Do you like Morris at 5,500 if they're out?
That's what I was just about to ask.
Maybe even just one's out, he could still be viable, but you obviously prefer both.
The volume's there. I mean, they're
15 shots last three games.
Yeah, and they played on a Wednesday, and he did see 32 minutes, which was the first time he saw north of 30 minutes since the second of the month. The logic is there. He is, for the most part, incredibly scoring dependent, and that does kind of worry me in this matchup. I think it makes sense, but I don't think I'd trust it in anything more than large field tournaments or single entry contests. Would you, obviously, depending how the injury report shakes out, if one of Kawhi or Paul George is active and the other is out, would you, I don't want to say immediately go to whoever's active, how high would you be on whoever is active? Obviously, it would depend on minutes limit, things like that. But
I mean, Paul George at 8,600 would be like an elite play if Kawhi's out.
That's super cheap.
Kawhi at 9,700, if Paul George is out, is a very good play. You can make the case he's an elite play as well. But I'll tell you what, man, like in a vacuum, if Jaylen Brown's out for Boston and Paul George is out for the Clippers, do you like Kawhi or Jason Tatum more?
Ooh, that's really hard.
I think I like Tatum by a smidge.
I think I like Tatum more in this smidge, and that's strictly from a matchup standpoint.
And you save, what, over $1,000? Or no, $900. So it's close. But yeah, it really depends, obviously. They're both upper echelon plays if the other one's out, though. We know that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, that will do it for us. 9 games here on Friday to end your week. Hopefully it's been a good one. Content-wise at FTN Daily on Friday, Joe will have the game-by-game article. I'll have the 5 stats. Also, we launched the NFL Draft Hub on FTN Fantasy. It's going to be a lot of prospect profiles from myself, Derek Brown, Tyler Lochner. I think Kalachi is going to do some. Jeff Ratcliffe and Brad Evans are going to have a ton of work in there. Jeff's already done an article on Carson Wentz, the trade that happened. There's a rankings for the top 100 free agents entering the free agency this year, mock drafts for the NFL mock draft. There's a ton of great stuff in there, and we're going to be updating it and providing content throughout the NFL offseason, so make sure you check that out over at ftnfantasy.com. Joe, have a good weekend, my man. Be safe in this snow, and we'll be back on Monday. Best of luck, everybody. Have a good weekend. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.